from Santa Anita Park. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Crisp, cool morning, and horses are running at full speed on this racetrack with just 24 hours to go ahead of probably the, I guess we could call this the, I guess it's hard. It's hard to say. Opening day, big cap day, and Santa Anita Derby day. Those are the three, you know, the three legs on the tripod at Santa Anita. And this is a good one. And not just here, of course. Nationwide, there is just so many interesting opportunities and spots that we're going to handicap today. A couple of horses. Wow, that was a pretty gray. Holy cow. a gray and a bay. Sparring down the lane here from Glocker's Corner, and it is going to be a fast-paced 3 hours. Brad Free is going to join us here fairly immediately because I want to do a lot of the card with Brad. Unique opportunity to run through with him. He's going to do it by phone. He's working from home today, and of course Brad and Steve Anderson really, you know, kind of sharing the reporting duties and when it comes to days like this with Jay Pribman retired. We're going to hear from Jay, by the way, next week. Jay's got and of course, still heavily involved in Hall of Fame. The lineup, let's run it down. Hammer is actually on his way back. Should be here in just a couple of minutes from bringing wife Gina to LAX. Or I think to LAX, I assume. And so he'll be here momentarily. We'll check in with Scott Shapiro later in this hour. Marcus Hirsch for a little game plan action with Marcus, and I'm sure he's looked at all the three-year-old races, and actually haven't looked at game plan at DRF.com to see which specific races he's selected. James Scully, in the middle part of hour two, will go to New York. Dave Grenning will join us at about 10:20, and we'll talk about this Gotham, which is just wild. 14 in the Gotham, assuming everybody goes, and well, there is an AE, Danny Gargan on the outside, and with a horse that, you know, that certainly belongs, but it's a fascinating group because of the 14, really 8 of them are stretching to a mile, and 6 of them have gone a mile or more in the past, and they seem to have the look. I suppose there's going to be a sprinter stretch out that does stay on. I mean, all 8 sprint stretch out candidates, you know, they're not all going to end up on the lead. So it does feel like you got a, if not a collapse scenario, you certainly have a scenario in that Gotham where horses from, you know, just behind the point and horses from off the pace have the best chance. It really feels that way. And I mean, if you want a specific, it sure feels like Slip Mahoney and Lugan Knight. It feels like you start there, and they're logical. There's no less than what, 3 undefeated horses in this race that have won at least 3 times. Recruiter on the outside for Cal Lynch, who is very viable, and then for Andy Simoff, and it's hard not to root for Andy. He's got How Great Is Nate, who's 4-for-4 coming up with Juan Acosta, and it is a just a unique circumstance that brings 14 together for the Gotham. So I'm looking forward to Grenig's thoughts about it, and actually Nick Tamaro will follow Dave, so we'll get back-to-back New York opinions. I think in that third hour Harrow break here, we should be able to get a Gary Young visit in, at least by phone, if he doesn't want to come down from high atop Santa Anita Park. And Mike Welch in the last half hour to go through this eye-crossing Gulfstream card that's got really a little of everything. 2 maiden races and then the high-profile 3-year-olds on dirt and turf. There's a lot going on. Then there's the cross-country opportunities. Naira's got the cross-country with the three stakes in New York, the Busher, the Tom Fool, the Gotham, and then the two Arkansas bred stakes at Oaklawn that are good, and you're not going to need, you know, you're not going to need a Ouija board to understand the PPs with the Arky bred stake runners, and then when it comes to the coast to coast for first racing, here's your lineup if you haven't seen it yet: the Devona Dale, the Buena Vista, the McDermida, the San Felipe, and the Fountain of Youth. And one unique aspect of the two race days here and at Gulfstream, the fact that it'll be completed in an hour, at least by a schedule basis, an hour and 16 minutes. The Devona Dale goes off at 4:37. The Fountain is scheduled for 5:43. So that'll be an intense pick five. And benefiting the, a good portion is benefiting the TAA, which is a nice concept as well. So cross-country action and coast-to-coast pick five action, and then, you know, the betting menus at all of the venues. There's actually, I should mention too, of course, the point races at Turfway, that are quite good, the Battaglia and the Cincinnati Trophy. There's actually three stakes at Fairgrounds as well. There's a lot going on. Turfway today, I want to mention, you got another pick five carryover, late pick five carryover. And what was interesting about that sequence last night, there was one $30 horse and three more $20 horses, you know, 9-1, 8-1, 8.50-1, and I think 14-1. I mean, they weren't outlandish horses. They were fourth, fifth choices, and they just all happened to stack up like planes over O'Hare. So you've got a just under $100,000 pick five carryover at Turfway, and we'll see if Scully and Schaap may have some notions about it. Before we get started, and Hammer's just getting situated as well, and before we reach for Brad Free, we've got to visit for a minute again. That news that broke yesterday is now the second rider in 2 months to take his own life. And the outpouring when it comes to the Canchari family, who's just had a series of tragedies befall them, including their father, who died 2 years ago. There was also Alex's brother, who was critically injured in a car accident and who's badly impaired. And he leaves the family, and reached out to a couple of different contacts, including Andrew Offerman, who, of course, was at Canterbury for an extended period, now at Naira, but next week, and Minnesota HBPA, I imagine, and Iowa HBPA, when we're at New Orleans at the convention, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll visit this and try to get you, I know there's a GoFundMe already to help the family, but two children and one on the way. It's just heartbreaking, and that's beyond heartbreaking, obviously. It's just devastating. So thoughts to everybody, and you can tell by the reaction, everybody means anybody he came in contact with. He was a good rider and a good young man, and it's just not fair. Rick Hammerly joining us, and Hammer continues to just produce experiences that the average Angelinen visitor does not get. And down on Melrose Avenue yesterday for lunch at Spartina, and that was fabulous. Thanks again for another, as we head toward the ultimate goal tomorrow. Thanks a lot.
Well, after all, you are a guest in town, and we got to show off a little bit. After all, this is my town. I grew up here, and I've been in and out for 60 years, going back and forth, and Yeah, we went down to Melrose. It's kind of an eclectic street on its own, with a couple miles down the road, Paramount Studios, and then as we keep going, the little shops and places like that. But Spartina is a restaurant that is run by a friend, acquaintance of mine, Stephen Kalt, who was his ex-New Yorker restaurateur. And
had a Spartina in New York. The minute you said the name, I knew the name.
Yeah, and I think the early 90s, and then moved to California and decided to call it the same thing. And it's just, you know, it's one of those places, you know me, I'm meat and potatoes.
That's true.
But when I go to places that I know they're good, you had me experience, what was that pasta dish we had?
Oh, the Garganelli. Yeah,
Garganelli.
That you'd never had. It's one of my favorite pasta shapes. Just fabulous.
Yeah, so I had that and some kind of vodka sauce, which was fantastic. Yeah. And, I went, we were with Frank here talking about pizza all morning. I had to get the pizza there, too, as well. But, no, just a fine restaurant. He does a great job. And I'd been there for dinner, never been there for lunch. And the lunch crowd is just great. Just a very unassuming place. People walking in and out, sitting down. You got to see a movie star sighting.
It was a movie. Let me tell you, yesterday was. It's funny how things work in this town. You're eligible to see, film people anywhere. So we wrap up the show, and down on the plaza, here's Bo Derek and Keith Brackpool and of course Bo heavily involved in the game here, and so it's great to see her. She and I share a birthday, and. Then we're sitting there, and I look over. There was one other table. We got there right at opening, and there's one other table. And there's a somewhat petite woman who with sharp features, and I realized right away that it was Isabella Huppert. And so I said to Rick, you know who that is? And he's like, no, Isabella Huppert. It's just funny. You go around this town. I mean, you're going to get those occasions. That's going to happen to you here.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's fun. That's fun.
It's funny because you mentioned Bo Derek. Any person or any man that's our age she was a star anyway, but she's been around the racetrack so much along, and seeing her is like, wow, this is great. I know I'm in Southern California.
She's sweet as can be, and of course had a stint on the CHRB, right?
And very helpful, and very, passes the word around about the game.
She loves the game.
Very big ambassador about that. And like you say, Keith Brackpool is here, who was my ex-boss, I don't know, I get lost, 8-10 years
Everywhere
ago.
Everywhere we go, you run into an ex-boss. Hey, now!
Yes, it's true, so it's good. What can I tell you? But yeah. We had a
couldn't resist.
No, I had an airport run this morning.
Yeah, good for you,
Burbank. Burbank.
Oh,
Burbank.
I was going to say, I didn't think you.
So
went that
now
way.
The rules are, this early if it's LAX, you take the flyaway or an Uber, but at Burbank, we'll do the Burbank runs this early.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna Uber right into Brad Free's visit and get going on what is an outstanding big cap San Felipe Day card. And Brad, good morning.
Steve Hammer, good morning. I'm glad you guys came to town and the weather cleared up, and we actually have workouts scheduled for Friday morning at Santa Anita, first time in a week and a half. So I don't know if you guys had anything to do with that. If so, well done.
Baby steps, Brad. We went from nothing to a little jogging one day, and then yesterday we galloped a little bit, and like you said, we're running full bore today.
Well, it's interesting because we haven't had a workout at Santa Anita since February 23rd, a week and a half without workouts, and it's creating a whole lot of uncertainty going into one of the biggest days of the spring meet. None of these horses have worked in a week and a half, and the training schedules have been disrupted, not only from workouts, but on the mornings where there are joggers only. I mean, okay, a jog is okay to stretch a horse's legs, but these horses need some cardio exercise. And earlier this week, I was walking through the barn area, and I think I almost got kicked a half dozen times. These horses are so high and so full of energy, pent up energy inside them, and just begging to get out there and do something. I don't know what's going to transpire today, tomorrow, this weekend with these horses that have not worked, many of who have had been short on gallops, but it's a very unusual, as far as I know, unprecedented situation for us to go, you know, a week and a half without any workouts at all. Very, very strange conditions.
Brad, on that topic, because we've talked about it leading into the week, you know, one consideration has been, particularly for the big cap, because that's where the shippers are, that those that are shipping in may have, there's three of them, may have, you know, the, even if it's a modest fitness edge, it's an edge.
I completely agree, and that's one reason why I think that Proxy is going to give Defunded and the locals all that they can handle. Normally speaking, shippers into California are up against it against the locals, but as you suggested, that's not the case this year. You know, Proxy and Warrant and even Scarlet Fusion, these horses have been able to train right along. They I don't know when Warrant or Scarlet Fusion got in, but Proxy arrived on Tuesday. I assume that they went on the same plane. Proxy has been able to train at Fairgrounds, you know, throughout the over the past few weeks. He hasn't missed anything. I know that he galloped over the Santa Anita racetrack yesterday morning, and he comes in off a better than looked fifth place finish in the Pegasus, has not missed any training. I think he's a huge, huge threat in the big cap. Again, normally speaking, you would give the edge to the locals in California, but that might not be the case this year.
Well, since we broke running on the outside, meaning the finale, let's do it that way, Brad, and work our way backwards, because actually, you know, a lot of the you know, the big races are at the end with the two grade ones. The Kill Row precedes the big cap, and you know, I'm in agreement with you. Proxy looks dangerous, and I specifically brought up Scarlet Fusion yesterday in conversation with Frank Miramati and Vince DeGregory and Nate Newby, and I think, you know, Joe Sharp is very clever. The win in the Connolly, a mile and a half on the turf, I'd love this concept, a turf to dirt move going the classic distance.
Hey Brad, real quick, you mentioned the classic distance, you mentioned Scarlet Fusion has gone the distance. How important do you think horses that have gone the distance have an advantage on the horses that are trying this distance for the first time, Brad? What is your
I think that's certainly a factor. I don't think it's a deal breaker. If you like a horse that's, you know, never gone a mile and one, not mile and a quarter, for example, Proxy, he's never gone a mile and one quarter. He's been running well at a mile and 1/8. It's a factor to consider, but I don't think it's, you know, among the top considerations that a better needs to do. In the case of Scarlet Fusion, yeah, a mile and a half last time out, you have to believe that this horse is dead fit going into the big cap, and his third place finish two starts back at Oakland, if I read the thoroughgraph numbers right, it got an unbelievable number. I'm going to double check it again just to make sure.
Negative quarter.
There you go. Minus a quarter. So, I mean, he's one, arguably the fastest horse in the race based on thoroughgraph figures with that wide trip third in a $200,000 stakes race at Oakland. So he has some, he's a very interesting horse that I will be including in my wagers. He's only listed 12-1. I'm greedy. I was hoping to get a little bit higher, but that's not going to happen with those big numbers. He's fit. He's coming in sharp for sharp, and yeah, he is a contender.
I'm glad to hear you agree, and I imagine that John White, who enjoys perusing Thoroughgraph himself, took that into consideration when he made Scarlet Fusion 12-1, that the sheet players are going to at least use him to some degree. You picked Defunded, I know, Brad, and let's talk about the front end. And I can tell you, talking to Baffert yesterday after the show, he was talking about the fitness issue. issue and you know the light road work these horses have had. And he said he's curious how they, you know, how they set the track up in terms of depth. He said because if it's heavy, he said our horses are gonna, it's gonna be a slog for them. So even Baffert is a little edgy about coming into this. But he thinks, you know, the speed of the track is gonna play into the discussion.
Well, that makes sense, and that's one.
We're in a very precarious situation. When horses are tired, that's when negative things can transpire.
Yep.
And some of these horses, if they come in short on fitness, having been unable to train properly over the past week and a half, there's going to be some horses wobbling down the stretch. Who knows how fast the track will be on Saturday? I would assume that, typically speaking, they can get these, you know, come back out of rain, and it hasn't rained since in a couple of days anyway. I would imagine the track would be fast, but that's just an estimation.
Yeah.
And in the case of Baffert, I mean, his two horses, Defunded and Hopper, they are among the two of the key speeds in the field, along with Stiletto Boy. So I don't expect Defunded and Hopper to go head-to-head. But with Stiletto Boy in the field up there, he likes to be forwardly placed. There will be some gas in this field, and the pace should be legitimate. I prefer Defunded. I picked Hopper third. I believe he's going to be adding blinkers. That's what Baffert said early this week. And they're, you know, those two are huge contenders, along with late runner Proxy. Proxy will have his chance. There won't be a false pace in this race, that's for sure. And Proxy will have his chance rallying from behind. But you're right about the speed of the track, especially with some of these horses potentially short on condition.
Well, Brad, I'm glad you brought that up. So let's just let everyone know the situation. It had rained earlier in the week, obviously. Yesterday was a typically normal winter day here in Southern California. It was probably in the 60s. It was sunny. Had a great chance to dry up both the turf and the dirt. And I believe today is going to be very similar. And then going in to Saturday is going to be that way too. So the track should be, quote, back to normal. And so it's not like there shouldn't be any moisture in the track, I wouldn't think, going into Saturday.
Won't be any moisture in the main track. Now, we also have a half dozen grass races that we're going to have to deal with on Saturday. And I would be shocked if the turf course was listed firm by Saturday. I mean, we've had 9 inches of rain in the Arcadia area over the past week and a half.
Wow.
I mean, that's a virtual flood in this part of the state.
Wow.
So the turf course is, I would expect it to have a whole lot of give to it. And I'm not sure how it's going to influence the races. It certainly adds one more element of uncertainty. One of the reasons that Phil D'Amato has won so many grass races with these Europeans is he buys horses that like to come out to the west coast of the U.S. to race over firm going. Well, I don't think the going is going to be firm on Saturday, so it's going to be a question in the grass races. Who handles the course and who might struggle with it?
Let's talk about the Kilrow then, the 11th. Excuse me. And you mentioned D'Amato. He's got this race surrounded. He's got Master of Foxhounds, who will be up on the front end, and sometimes turf with given it. I mean, we rarely have this discussion in California, but softish turf sometimes favors the horse on the front end. He will have company, though, because Leo Powell's got Air Force Red right next to him. Obviously, Brad, Hong Kong Harry is way the horse to beat here.
There's no question about it. He has emerged as the top turf miler in California. He's going for his third consecutive graded stakes race.
And if this race was on firm, I think Hong Kong Harry would be a potential single in this field. You know, one of the reasons that I agree with what you said, speed types often do run well on horses that have some give in it. But I think that there's a perhaps a different reason. I wouldn't suggest that a wet turf course carries speed. What I would suggest is horses that get over the course are going to naturally be forwardly placed. So if a horse is handling the footing, he or she should be on or near the front end. Horses that struggle with the going and are just going to misfire are going to drop out, become discouraged, and just run around the course. In the case of the three principles that you just mentioned, those are the three. Hong Kong Harry on firm going, I think he'd be a potential standout. But Master of Foxhounds, he ran dynamite. His last start was terrific. He's in top form. He's shortening up from a mile and one quarter, and he should get a good trip. I believe he's going to sit second behind Air Force Red. If Air Force Red handles the turf course, and he has a win over a good course on December 31st. But that was a good course that was quick. He's going to make the lead, I believe, Air Force Red. I think the pace scenario is a little bit slower in this race, softer than it was in the Thunder Road. And if Air Force Red gets out there, gets comfortable, handles the going, I think he's a threat to wire the field. Master of Foxhounds should get first run. He's adding blinkers. And then the best horse in the field, no doubt about it. It's Hong Kong Harry rallying from behind.
A couple of horses I want you to touch on, Brad, for some opinion. And Balnikov was a horse that we got very excited about last year. Phil D'Amato had really tipped us off when he had come to the barn over the winter. And, he's flashed ability when he won the Oceanside. Then he kind of, I won't say disappointed in the Del Mar Derby, but he was late arriving. He comes to Keeneland, wins the Bryan Station, just gets beat in the Mathis Brothers Mile. I'm anxious to see if the four-year-old debut and where he goes as a four-year-old. And the last out, first-time five-year-old, DeJour. We shoved DeJour down people's throats last time, because he had my favorite Thoroughgraph age sire stat thing going for him, Brad. He came back as a five-year-old, missed his four-year-old year DeJour, which meant he had potential to come back multiple points faster, and he actually only paired up his career best on Thoroughgraph. He did get a new career top on Bayer, but DeJour with a second off the long layoff step forward is an interesting horse in here as well, and I'm delighted that John. I was disappointed that he didn't win. I cashed a nice exacta, but John made him 10-1. So I'm curious about Balnikov and DeJour, both having potential at ages 4 and 5 to kind of step forward.
The question for both these horses, are they fast enough to compete against Group 1 company? The numbers would suggest that there's a whole lot of doubt with regards to that. Balnikov, the class distinction between turf three-year-olds that Balnikov has been running against and older horses is huge. It's a major class jump to go from age-restricted grass stakes races into a graded stakes race open to older horses. Balnikov is facing older for the first time in his career. His numbers are good, but his numbers put him somewhere in the, he's listed 5-1. I can see him going 6-1, 8-1. He needs to move forward as a four-year-old to be competitive against the likes of the older horses we mentioned earlier. And frankly, the same thing applies to DeJour. That was a very clever handicapping angle, backing DeJour at 15-1 coming in off of a layoff. He had a license to improve from his previous, the last time we saw him. I'm not so sure that he did. The pace was quick. He rallied. He just missed. It was a tough beat if you backed him. He ran well, but he did not run particularly fast. He got a 6 on Thoroughgraph. That's exactly what Balnikov got last time out, missing by a nose in the Mathis Brothers for three-year-olds on December 26th. So with these two horses, they can improve. They must improve if they're going to be competitive against Hong Kong Harry and company. At this stage, I'm just not sure they're fast enough.
Brad, I'm going to throw one more horse at you that I've been watching a little bit since I got back here, and that's a 20-1 shot, Iridio, who has run with these horses, hasn't beat them, But threw in his last best performance last time in the Thunder Road. Looks like he needs something to run at. He made a late run last time, finished third to a lot of these at 33-1 under the hot riding Hector Berrios, who's just teamed up with Jeff Mullins and just knocked him out on the turf. I was very interested to see what price John put on this horse, and 20 is probably the right number. But he has not been disgraced against Hong Kong Harry, Air Force Red. He's run with these, and you know, with the right trip, he could be in the trifecta.
There's no doubt he can be in the trifecta. And the truth of the matter is, Iridio is a faster horse than both DeJure and Belnikov, who we just discussed. I mean, he got a 5 3/4 last time. He got a 5 3/4 in summer at Del Mar, finishing fifth in the Seabiscuit. He got a 5 finishing second in the Del Mar Mile. Those are faster numbers than DeJure and Belnikov have ever run. So he's going to lag back. He'll be rolling late. If everything breaks his way, he could hit the board. He's the type of 20-1 shot that I like to include in vertical wagers. I don't think he's good enough to defeat Hong Kong Harry, but he is a definite horse to consider in the trifecta.
Brad, let's move backwards, and I do want to ask about one allowance race. We'll skip over the 10th, which is a starter, where I think Synthesis could be very tough for Davey Jacobson. But this 9th race down the hill, kind of fun. We had Michael W. McCarthy with us the other morning, and Honey Jar for Bo Hirsch gets a little bit of a turn back. He's already been successful down the hill. Thought he's obviously a player in here. Carmen Miranda for Phil D'Amato. Some thoughts about the hill race, the 9th, starts the late
Yeah,
four.
I think if you want to get past a leg in the pick six sequence, and there's a mandatory payout on Saturday, races 7 through 12, race number 9, you might be able to get past this race using only 2. I'm not sure if I'm going 2 deep or 3 deep, but I'll tell you why in a minute. First of all, Honey Jar is clearly the horse to beat. You know, she ran well in her comeback. She ran like a filly that was short. She pressed the pace coming down the hill, and she got tired late, finished third. Last time out, she got away from the apprentice rider, opened up 8 lengths, going 2 turns, went 45-2, and she got collared late by a pretty good filly named Kitty Katana. Honey Jar now shortening back from a mile to 6.5. In this race, it's her third start back from a layoff. She should be fit. I say should be because of the interrupted training patterns of late. And this is her day on Saturday. But Carmen Miranda, excuse me, is a 3-time winner. She's in top form. She finished second last time out behind a next out winner. Her numbers are good. She has a forwardly placed style, and both Honey Jar and Carmen Miranda, they appear to be the two, you know, speeds of the field, but I think they're also the two best horses in the race. So if they can stay out of each other's way, they could run 1-2 all the way around. The third horse in the race, and I'm not sure what to do with her yet, is very good, and she's trained by an under-the-radar trainer who has rapidly become one of my favorites. His name is Labrado Baracchio. Hmm. And Lady Jane, who was a claiming filly last year, she has improved under Labraccio's care. She finished second at 50-1 in the Grade 3 Las Cienegas 2 starts back. She ran fast that day. She got beat by a good filly. She finished in front of Freedom Flyer, who came back to win a stakes race. And then last time out, Lady J did not have the greatest of trips. She finished 5th of 6. It's kind of an inconclusive performance. She's a come from behind her. She'll be chasing 2 good front runners in Honey Jar and Carmen Miranda. And Lady J is, I think she is a contender, but whether she is tomorrow or Saturday or not, keep your eye on Labrado Baracchio. His horses repeatedly outrun their prices, and he is a guy that people haven't quite caught on to yet. So Lady J is the third horse in the race, but it goes through Honey Jar and Carmen Miranda.
I got to ask, Brad, I normally would skip over a maiden 40, but it starts the late pick 5. And it's kind of a hodgepodge. You can take out the 6 and the 7 already. Magic Accountant Vinny the Coin, who was dropping for Yakteen and Accelerate Gelding. You got any help for us in this thing?
I wish I did. This typically in a maiden claiming spread, you can usually narrow it down to, you know, a manageable number. Not this race. It's a maiden 40, and there are a lot of ways to go in here. And honestly, I have to spend a lot of money and use a lot of horses. I picked number 10, Stop at a Tray, who's the 3-1 favorite on John White's line. Snap Daddy's the second choice. He's my second preference. Number 11, Pacific States. All three horses appear to be in good form. Snap Daddy is dropping in for a tag for the first time, so you have to respect that. There's one crazy horse in here that I'm going to use, and he's 20-1. It's number 3, Take Charge Curly. Each start has been better than the start before. He was gelded in late December, and he came back as an improved horse. He probably could have won his comeback in December at Los Al. Then they tried him 2 turns. He couldn't get the trip. Last time out, he just ran around the track and really didn't do a whole lot. I want to believe that he is a better horse than that 5th place finish suggests. He gets a jockey change on Saturday. Not that Kyle Frey did anything wrong, but sometimes you change jockeys just to shift things up. I think that Take Charge Curly is a better horse than his form looks. He's a giant price. It's a reach, I know. But the fact that trainer Phil Oviedo, doesn't drop him in for maiden 20, keeps him up at the maiden 35-40 level, suggests to me that this horse is doing well. His numbers are headed the right way. And for a crazy bomb, I'll be using number 3, Take Charge Curly. But you're right. It's a hodgepodge. It's a wide-open scramble.
Oviedo has not won since New Year's Eve 2021.
I know.
He's running. He's had an 0-42 since then.
It's crazy because Phil Oviedo is a very good trainer. He's on a long losing streak. You can say the same thing for Eddie Truman. I don't think he won a race last year. These are two good horsemen. Their stock is just not up to snuff right now. Sooner or later, both these guys are going to bust out. I'm not going to let that long losing streak, which it is long, steer me off of a 20-1 bomb that could outrun his price.
Lincoln Hawk going to wire the 7th?
Well, I picked Lincoln Hawk because I thought his last race was solid. I don't think he's going to wire the field because I think he's more of a comfort behinder, but he ran a lot better than the line shows last time out. He got stuck in a bad spot going into, and Lincoln Hawk had to wait and wait and wait, and then he rallied wide, and he finished well. I'm not sure about the mile 1/8 for Lincoln Hawk. I know he's a closer, but sometimes closers lose their punch at longer distances.
Sure.
If this was a mile, I would like him a lot more. I picked him, without a whole lot of conviction. Cash Equity has won this condition. He's running for the 80 claim optional claiming tag. And there's a crazy horse for you. Number 5, Tarantino. He has run races that are fast enough. Ed Mosier is coming down to
Southern California on Saturday with some pretty good horses, including Stiletto Boy in the big cap.
Tarantino needed his last start. He has run well over a soft course. He was on a yielding course in October of 2021. He finished 3rd at Keeneland. So he has run fast enough to win this level. He has proven on a course that is wet. 2nd start back from a layoff, and he's going to be forwardly placed in a race that could unfold at a tepid clip. So Tarantino is my upsetter, but I prefer Lincoln Hawk and Cash Equity in the 1-2 spots.
When I suggested wiring, I put an arrow, meaning looking at this group, there's not a lot of pace, and I would love to see Rispoli go forward with Lincoln Hawk and establish early position, because this thing is gonna go at a fairly mundane clip.
Yeah, it could. If that's the case, then I think the Tarantino has an even better chance to surprise a few people.
We turn, you mentioned Mosier, and let's talk about the San Felipe, which goes as the sixth. And Mosier comes down from San Francisco with Chase the Chaos. We talked about the El Camino Real Derby winner, and Mosier at the time said he would either consider coming down for something here or going to Turfway for the Jeff Ruby. And the fact that he comes here kind of tells us that, you know, the dirt, the return to dirt is going to, you know, test is going to come early. Then, of course, we've got the Yakteen scenario where he's got his own horse that he's had from the time that Practical Move was a two-year-old, and then he's got the transferred horses. There's a lot of good things happening here. John Sheriffs was with us as well, Brad, on Wednesday, and Skinner looks like a major player in here off the maiden.
I completely agree. I don't know if Skinner is going to win on Saturday, but I like this colt a lot. I mean, he was a promising two-year-old, and I recall Sheriffs last summer when I did the Del Mar preview story talking about the two-year-olds. Sheriffs mentioned Skinner, and at the time he said that, you know, he's going to start early, but wait until he's a three-year-old. He's going to be a better colt at three. He ran super in his debut last July as a two-year-old. I bet him in the Del Mar Futurity. I needed him to finish second behind Cave Rock. He didn't get there. He ran third. He's grade one placed, and then he missed fired. Okay, Sheriffs gave him all kinds of time off. There, he returned in a maiden race, and he could not have been more impressive. He dominated the field. He rallied from behind, which is never easy to do around two turns at Santa Anita on dirt. He won by more than three lengths. Victor Espinosa had something left in the tank at the wire. He came back and worked only 11 days later, and here he is 3 weeks later in the San Felipe. This is a serious horse headed in the right direction. Again, I don't know if he'll win on Saturday, but at a mile and one-eighth and even a mile and one-quarter, I think he is a major player. National Treasure is the proper favorite. He finished third last time out in a productive race. He did not have a good trip in the Sham. He was down inside, behind horses. The 1-2 finishers validated that race. Reincarnate ran super last weekend in the Rebel, and Newgate came back to win the Lewis. So National Treasure, he did kind of hang the length of the lane, but he ran well behind two good horses. He's making his second start back from a layoff. He's arguably the most accomplished in the field. I picked Skinner. I just like this horse. I like this trainer. I like the forward progression that he made from two to three. But you have to recognize the National Treasure is already proven to be one of the top of members of his crop, third in the Breeders' Cup last year, third in his comeback. Those are the two. Hijazi, I don't know how far he wants to run. Mosier's coming in with a sharp horse who's not fast enough and probably not good enough, but I wouldn't talk anybody off of a long shot who has won his last two starts by open length. So it's a really interesting field in the San Felipe, and we're going to find out a little bit more about these California three-year-olds.
That also includes Mandela with a first out winner for Pin Oak. This may be a horse in Go Rocket Ride, a candy ride out of the Uncle Mo mare that was bred by Larry Best. And considering all the activity, we'll get to Larry Best and Oxo and Paulo Lobo when we talk about the Gotham later. But, you know, here's a horse that Larry may regret selling, but happy to see Pin Oak with a nice horse and Mandela with a now three-year-old. What's your Go Rocket Ride read?
I respect him. I mean, he's fast. His maiden win was impressive. The runner-up came back to win. Sonoran's not a great horse, but he did break his maiden next time out after Go Rocket Ride destroyed him. Flavian Pratt got off of Go Rocket Ride after his sprint debut that he won by nearly six, and he told Mandela, this horse will go long. His pedigree would suggest as much. Mandela said that he has trained like a horse that will run on, and he's going to be up there on the lead. If he can stay out of the way of Hijazi, I don't know which of these two is going to make the lead, but if those two can avoid a pace duel, and if Go Rocket Ride gets out there and gets comfortable,
I would not be at all surprised, despite his inexperience, if he just wired the field. So, yeah, he is a player in a really, really deep race.
Didn't he win this race last year with a horse of similar...
It was Forbidden Kingdom, I believe.
Yeah,
right.
Yep.
He was a sprinter stretching out. He'd already been a graded stakes winning sprinter at the time with higher credentials than Go Rocket Ride, but certainly a similar running style and uncertainty around two turns. Forbidden Kingdom, Mandel always suspected he was a one turn horse. I did not sense that he feels the same way about Go Rocket Ride, who he believes, and so did Flavian Pratt, that this colt will run long.
Of the other transfers out of the Baffert barn to Tim Yakteen, who do you prefer with Fort Bragg and Mr. Fisk?
Neither one of them, actually. I mean, certainly Fort Bragg, who has not started since December, maybe he's a better colt this year as a three-year-old. He was just okay last year. I mean, he did finish in front of Reincarnate, but Reincarnate certainly has taken a step forward this year as a three-year-old. And Mr. Fisk, I don't know. I mean, he finished three quarters behind Reincarnate. That was Reincarnate's, light bulb performance, the light bulb switch finally went on. I don't see any reason, for me anyway, to support Fort Bragg or Mr. Fisk. But Yakteen's other horse, the horse that he's had from scratch,
right,
and developed as a two-year-old, I think Practical Move is a good colt. I don't know if a Practical Joke is going to develop into a mild one-quarter type, but each race last year was better than the race before. He looked pretty good going a mile a 16th in the Low South Futurity in December. Five starts under his belt as a two-year-old. This race, the San Felipe, has been the target all along. He hasn't missed a beat in training until the recent interruptions. And Practical Move, I think he's a serious horse, and we're going to find out more on Saturday and then perhaps in the Santa Anita Derby or wherever he runs next, how far he wants to run. I'm not sure, again, if a son of Practical Joke will turn out to be a classic distance type, but Practical Move, a high-class two-year-old, training well for his comeback, and he's a good one. And I think it'd be kind of cool if Yakteen finished in front of all those other, former Bafferts. I'd like that outcome.
You know, Brad, it was interesting enough of talking about this horse. He was one of the few non-Baffert nominees for the Lewis that we ran 3 weeks ago, and I think he'd have been favored in there, and I think he would have won that race. So, like you said, this is the race they were pointing to, probably because it's a 50-pointer to bring him back in. But I totally agree with you. I think the mile and 16th is it. But first time off the layoff. It's been we can call it a layoff now. It's been since December, but. Be interesting to see how the original Yakteen does against the other Yakteens.
Yeah, he's a good horse. I'm not sure what to make of the Low South Futurity, because
some of the horses in that race never really went on. Arabian Lion was 2-5 in that field. He came back and bombed again. It could be the competition made him look better than he really is, but he's been training very well. I've watched him work. And he's worked well this winter. Again, we're going to find out not only Practical Move, but all these horses, whether they've moved forward from their two-year-old season to three.
Brad Free with us, and just two more quick races to discuss. Is Quatrell doesn't lose, does she, in the Buena Vista?
The only way she does, I think, is if for some reason she... has missed gallops and or does not like the turf course. I made her the best bet on the card.
Yeah.
Her win was just phenomenal. It's worth going back, firing up DRF Formulator, and taking a look at the replay. You talk about an explosive turn of foot, and Hector Berrios, he knows this mare well now, and I mean, she ran past closing remarks like she was basically standing still. If Quatrell reproduces that firm turf victory on a course that's likely to be soft, I think it's lights out. 3-1 would be a gift. I expect her to go a little bit shorter.
And that gets us to let's call it the Big Cal Cap, because because Buzz and Kangaroo Court might put on a show, Brad. I talked about this yesterday. It's amazing on a card like this that this is this race may be one that people are talking about Sunday morning at Clocker's Corner.
Yeah, race four is a really good race. You wouldn't normally expect a cowbred, one other than sprint for three-year-olds, to come up like a stakes race, but Buzz and Kangaroo Court are two very, very good cowbreds. Buzz, he won by, you know, the length of the grandstand with a 93 Beyer speed figure. Two horses behind him came back to win, and Kangaroo Court, all he did last summer was win a maiden race by more than 14 lengths.
You know, what's interesting about this race, the Beyer speed figure of Buzz was 93, and Kangaroo Court got an 81. So you look at the Beyers and you go, well, Buzz is a faster horse than Kangaroo Court. Thoroughgraph has it in the exact reverse order. Kangaroo Court is a faster horse on Thoroughgraph than Buzz. Kangaroo Court was actually entered in the I'm Spoken Stakes in early September at Del Mar off that maiden win. He had a setback. Joaquin kicked him out for a little bit, brought him back, and he's training very well, according to Joaquin, who expects Kangaroo Court to run a big race first start back. A very interesting cowbred one other than with two very good horses. I picked Buzz primarily because he has a recent race under his belt, whereas Kangaroo Court is coming in off a layoff, but they are inseparable virtually going in.
It should be really entertaining, as the whole, really the whole day should. Brad Free, as always, thanks so much, and look forward to seeing you.
See you guys tomorrow. Take care.
Brad Free, Hammer, and it just does such a great job. It is so enjoy listening to him.
He's been here for a long time. He knows the horses and, you know, describes them well, and it's always good to hear from him. I just want to. The San Felipe, I've written it down, but I can't find it, but I brought it up here. I just want to read some of the horses that have run in the San Felipe and have gone on. It's a pretty good lineup, so keep that in mind. There might be a decent horse coming out of here. Since 2000, we've had Fusaishi Pegasus. These are the winners of these races. Point Given, Medaglia d'Oro, let's see, who else? Pioneer of the Nile, Creative Cause, Dortmund, Mastery, Bolt Doro, Authentic, Life is Good, and last year Forbidden Kingdom. So this is a race that for years horses have been pointed for. Obviously, it's the prep for the Santa Anita Derby, but a lot of horses have gone on and done well from this race.
Well, there was a commonality to a lot of those names.
Yes, there was.
That fairly obvious in terms of dominating performance, the Baffert runners. But this
California
is
Chrome. Excuse me, I left California Chrome off that
come
list.
On.
How could I have done that? Yeah, I knew there was another one in there, but California Chrome, of course, on his long run to Kentucky. NX this race as well. That's a look out here. It's pretty cool, Steve, right? This is a normal morning at Clocker's Corner with horses coming out, going both directions, some workers on the rail, a little frost on the turf, people down here with cups
frost
of coffee.
On the pumpkin. There
yeah.
You go.
Yes. I had a. And look at the snow on the mountains is almost all gone, too. So.
It's true. Although, you know, I can't. Coming back, I didn't. I'll have to send you the pictures. I should put them up. I shouldn't be taking pictures while I'm driving, I suppose. I'd get in trouble for that. But the mountains coming on the Glendale, coming back toward Pasadena, the view of the mountains.
In the background?
Unbelievable.
Full of snow. I actually did the same thing. I'm sorry.
Unbelievable.
I'd like to take the picture with the sign in the off to the side so people actually can see where this was when you'd show them 10 years from now. Like, you're not going to believe those mountains were covered with snow.
after there's another 14-year drought, I guess. Scott Shapiro is going to join us. We're only going to take one break at the bottom of hour two this morning or thereabouts. We'll split the show in half. This morning, let's quickly get Scott Shapiro in here. Marcus Hirsch is going to join us. Scully and Dave Grenig between now and 11. Shap, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Hammer. How you guys doing?
We're doing great now. Although I still got the gloves and the scarf on.
Not me. Not me.
We talked yesterday. What was the topic of the? And we went to Spartini yesterday.
It was very funny, actually. About two different people. The owner chef, Steve, and then two women behind us, both mentioning how at some point yesterday it was 50 degrees in New York City and in Los Angeles at the exact same time, both 50s.
And how the reaction is. We're 50 here. We're cold.
Everybody's thrilled in New York.
50 in New York. They're laying in Central Park. It's classic.
Well, so. I've told that story a million times about being in Montreal, and you'd get a patch of negative 10 degree weather for a week, and all of a sudden, then it would go up to, let's say, 28 or 30, and you're out in a light jacket because your body, it's so much more comfortable. And I would come home in the spring to my parents, like for Passover, and they put a jacket on. What's wrong with you? I said, what's wrong with me? I said, it's gorgeous. It's 48 degrees compared to what we were getting in Quebec. Too funny. Shap, well, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about you because you were an absolute standard out here for so long.
Yep.
I definitely miss it come winter, although not maybe the last week or so with the weather out there. But outstanding card out there at Santa Anita, of course, at Gulfstream. A lot going on at Turfway. Just of course the Gotham and the Busher. What a tremendous way to start the first Saturday in March as we get that much closer to the first Saturday in May.
All right, let's dive in. Pick off. I didn't talk to you ahead of time about what you were favoring in terms of action.
Yeah, I mean, first I just wanted to mention that there's a late pick five carryover at Turfway tonight.
Yep.
99,000 and change, almost 100,000. So that is a great way this evening to kick off, Friday night into Saturday. And I'll give one horse in the first leg there and then move to Saturday. It's race four. It's an open 12-5 claimer. And I think you want to use number six, Cut Glass, who's an 8-1 shot, who makes the second start at this level for owner-trainer John Howard. And just didn't have an ideal voyage last time out, and it's not mentioned in the running line. So I think we're going to get a good price. Veteran John McKee jumps aboard for the first time in a while. He was aboard one of the more recent wins for this son of Carpe Diem. So don't leave off number six, Cut Glass, in the first leg of the late pick five sequence. Again, a almost $100,000 carryover tonight in Florence.
I've got the pages with me, and I'm gonna look at it myself.
Scott, real quick, just 30-second synopsis of Turfway, and I kind of think you have to watch it for a while, but if you were just going to jump in and start playing tonight, any trends, anything to look for, anything, that stands out more than anything else?
Well, I just think you want to handicap it using all your tools. I think if I was going to try to teach somebody how to handicap, it's a great place. Usually if you go too fast early or battle up front, the race falls apart and vice versa. So it's a fair track in terms of race shape. You want to watch trips. Just a lot going on there, so just do your work. It's very hard to just dive into the past performances and just look quickly, so it is a track you want to spend your time on, not to discourage anybody from taking a shot tonight, but fair racetrack, full field, and you want to take advantage of looking at pace dynamics and such like that.
Racing has been just terrific, and some, moments like last night where you had three $20 winners and one $30 winner to produce this $100,000 carryover. Into the Saturday action, Chap, where are we headed?
Well, let's stick with the two. We'll just go basically with stakes races here. I've looked at the Derby and Oaks preps for the most part. Turfway tomorrow night has two 20 points to the winner races, one on the road to the Oaks and then the John Battaglia Memorial on the road to the Derby, of course. And in the Cincinnati Trophy, I do like the favorite number three, Botanical, 8-5 on the line, Brad Cox. This is a horse that's really taken to the all-weather surface in Florence, 2-2 there. Has run on the front end, and one of the two wins came from just off the pace than the other. I think there's some cheaper speed in here, some sprinter-type speed, so I would think Chris Landeros could sit a pocket trip. Botanical, my pick in the Cincinnati Trophy. And in the Battaglia Memorial, a pretty competitive and an oversubscribed field here. We've got 12 and then two in the also eligible list, although with Clear the Air, one of them set to go in the Gotham. That one's unlikely, I would think, assuming he's in New York. But I like Scooby Quando here at 6-1.
Yeah.
So this is a horse that won on debut in the Turfway Preview Stakes at 6.5 furlongs. Now, beating Stakes Company on debut was impressive. I didn't think it was the strongest group that day, so I kind of was just, you know, thinking this might be a horse to play against moving forward. But then in the first try at two turns on February 11th, this horse was wide throughout and ran a really good second, and I thought battled to the wire to hold off the third-place finisher, Miranda Wrights. The winner, Wadsworth, who has been gelded by Brad Cox and has really taken to the all-weather surface in two tries up there and is probably going to be one of the favorites, if not the favorite, in the Jeff Ruby Stakes, was the one that beat Scooby Quando. So I think with the additional start under his belt and with the two-turn experience and more of an inside draw this time, I like Scooby Quando at 6-1 in the Battaglia.
Don't disagree with either tab.
All right. Well, we'll hope to get those home. Botanical, like I said, going to be the favorite. So those are the two Stakes races, one Oaks Prep and one Derby Prep at Turfway. Moving to Gulfstream, the two prep races, I thought that Devona Dale came up extremely strong, the most promising and exciting of the three Oaks Prep races. This is a one-turn mile event, of course. Red Carpet Ready has been awesome for Rusty Arnold. I've got a lot of respect for the Daughter of Oscar Performance. She has every right to win her fourth in a row to start her career. Not overly against her, but I do like a horse that's going to offer much better value at number two, Infinite Diamond, who I thought, well, first off, has taken a true affinity to these one-turn mile events at Gulfstream. We know they can be a tricky configuration. Some horses like it, some horses don't. And Infinity Diamond, 2-for-2, going the one-turn mile at Gulfstream. And the last win was even better than it looks in the cash run. That was her first start as a three-year-old for Patrick Biancone. Jose Ortiz, who was aboard that day, is back aboard here. And I think she's going to get a really good trip. Maybe she'll get overlooked. I don't know if we'll get 10-1. But I like Infinite Diamond along with Red Carpet Ready in the Devona Dale.
I'm definitely using Infinite Diamond.
And that Thoroughgraph got getting back to the top right off the start of the year. So as Thoroughgraph players, pretty positive pattern for Infinite Diamond after the discouraging effort of the Alcibiades Akima, which I'm willing to forgive. And then in the Fountain of Youth, I mean, it's really hard to get by Forte. I mean, if you're trying to beat him in this field, I think you're hoping that, like, maybe like Who's Your Filly, the Filly and a couple other colts we've seen just isn't the same horse as a three-year-old as he was as a two-year-old. But his numbers, I mean, he doesn't even have to really move forward at all off those two-year-old numbers to beat this field. So I'm not overly against him. I am against Blazing Sevens, the second choice. I'm going to take a chance against. I'm just not fully convinced at this point that this Son of Good Magic is as good as that effort in the Champagne and maybe the number in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile shows. He's got to prove to me he's good at two turns. And I was looking back at Chad Brown's Derby horses, and he just doesn't really win with them first off the bench as a three-year-old. You look back at Zandon, who ran a good third in the Risen Star last year at 9-2, but finished third. You go back to Highly Motivated, who finished third in the Gotham at 4-5 in his first start since the stakes race on the Breeders' Cup undercard as a two-year-old. Good Magic, who was Chad's best Derby finisher, finishing second, of course, to Justify. He ran third in his first start since the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at 3-5. That was in the Fountain of Youth. And Practical Joke ran second in the Fountain of Youth in his first start. And I think you could argue that most of them, if not all of them, at least in my opinion at this point, were more talented, especially at two turns in Blazing Sevens. So I'm going to try to beat Blazing Sevens out of the vertical wagers. I'm going to use General Jim. I'm going to use Mage, who's, you know, the wild card trying two turns and winners for the first time. And I use Rocket Ken underneath, and I'll use along with Forte, and we'll try to beat Blazing Sevens out of the trifecta.
Great rationale and some good research. Good job.
What? Yeah, thank you. Hopefully it pays off. You never know. You know, it's like sample size, but you know, if you're Chad Brown, you're looking to win the Kentucky Derby, not the Fountain of Youth, so it kind of makes some sense.
Quick question in here, horse Cyclone Mischief, the mystery horse in here, who's run. You know, run a super race at Gulfstream, two races back, and you know, kind of threw in a clunker last time. Any thoughts on him? I don't know. I mean, he runs back to that race a little bit. He could hit the board.
He could, and I might consider using him in the third spots. It's interesting. A little bit of a tough read, Hammer. Well, first off, I think it was riding to instructions last time. Tyler Gaffalione doing what Dale Romans wanted, but he broke on top as the favorite in the Holy Bowl, was taken in hand, and never really got overly comfortable. Now, that being said, he still should have run a lot better at 6-5. It wasn't a terrible trip. The race before that, a massive number, no matter what metric you're looking at, Thoroughbred, Brisnet, etc. But it was at the one-turn mile, and it was with Lasix. Now, either of those things are going to be the case on Saturday. It will be without Lasix, and it'll be gone two turns. So I think Cyclone Mischief has some talent. I would expect Tyler from the outside to be more aggressive, probably sit just off the pace, not take this horse in hand. And if he's, you know, close to that 12-1 morning line price, he could be worth including in the gimmicks.
And that's a good reminder about the Lasix. Sometimes we forget that these younger horses, they go on and off, and in the stakes races, of course, they're not allowed to use it, so that's a good call there.
Exactly. It doesn't matter for all of them, but, you know, you look at the numbers sometimes as you're trying to figure out why horses may or may not have taken certain steps forwards or backwards. Definitely want to include it as part of the puzzle, if nothing else.
Excellent. What else?
I like a horse in the Busher. I mean, I thought the Gotham was, I mean, it's a really fun race. I just really lack an opinion in there, so I'm not going to act as if I have a strong one. I do think it's a real good race, but I'm going to go to number two, Capella, in race four, the Busher, the first of the Three Oaks races, coming at 2:20 Eastern, 11:20 Pacific. And this is a daughter of Quality Road that I've seen race twice in Florence at Turfway Park, going two turns over the all-weather surface there. And she's been very impressive, dominated a field on debut, and then really ran well, beating Nom de Plume, who ran huge for Paulo Lobo in that first level allowance event. Now she shifts into Oakland. She cuts back to one turn. I think she should have the foundation to outfinish this group in the two-turn races. And you look at the pedigree, the daughter of Quality Road is out of the dam, touched the star, making her a half to Bonnie South and Sun Pass. So there's some pedigree to believe that this horse isn't just thriving because she's racing at, you know, over the synthetic at Turfway Park. So I think Capella's the real deal. I'm looking forward to seeing how she fares out of town, and in terms of town being Kentucky and cutting back. But if she's near 5-2, I've got some interest in her in the Busher. I mean, Zarati ran huge for Robert Falcone Jr. on debut. If she gets back to that number, they're in big trouble. But that's a big if to me after getting some time. So I'm going to go with Capella in the Busher.
Well, the dirt, obviously the question. Chad Brown's got the two, the two players in there, and you mentioned Zarati. For a six-horse field, it's very competitive. Where else we going, Scott?
Yeah, last two, we'll go to the two big races at Santa Anita on the dirt, the San Felipe. I'm on National Treasure. I think we should get a decent price. It's kind of a now or never for me. This horse has been, I don't want to say a morning glory, because he's run good races in the afternoon, but not as good as he's worked. That Breeders' Cup Juvenile, forgivable effort, didn't get out of the gates all that well from the far outside. And as Brad mentioned, things didn't go perfectly in the Sham when he lacked punch. I think he's going to get a great trip along the inside under Johnny V. So we'll go with a formful result in the San Felipe. A really fun race. Going to sort things out quite a bit out there on the road to the Derby with that race. And then the big cap, a little bit more creative in here. I heard you talking about how the pace is going to be likely very contentious at the very least. I'm hoping number one, There Goes Harvard, gets the perfect mid-pack trip. This horse has never been off the board in six tries over the Santa Anita main track. I think the last race, the Thunder Road, going a mile over the turf, clearly a prep, never was really comfortable. But if you go back to that Gold Cup at Santa Anita at this same distance over the same track, he ran a race that could definitely beat this field, and I just think he's going to get a really good trip. Doesn't need to be way out the back, but doesn't need to be up and involved in the early pace. So we'll take a shot with a good price, 12-1 on number one. There goes Harvard in this year's big cap.
There you go. Well, we had Michael W. McCarthy the other morning, and we talked about what happened in the prep and how much he could move off of that. Shap, I appreciate it, and also as we move on with Twin Spires weekend preview at the races. A reminder about the leaderboard contest. It's the points are up, which means you gotta start taking it seriously and get your selections in on the leaderboard. Road to the Derby.
Yes, Dave from Wisconsin vaulting to the front with 171 points. I'm presuming he had confidence game and nobody else in the mix had that one in the Rebel, I think it was. Michael from out there in California that was on the lead, he had 169 going in. He still has 169. 26 points back to the rest, but like you said, it's time to get involved. The points are getting bigger. Those that have been involved, they're separating a little bit, so remember to opt in and get involved with those four big races this Saturday.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Shap, 34, on your Twitter. Good luck, Shap. We'll talk next week from the NHC. We'll talk to you Friday morning before the contestants launch into day one.
Sounds good. You're really getting the jet setting going. I'm excited for you to continue on your travels. But have a great weekend out there, guys.
Scott Shapiro, thanks so much. We're going to actually go to Marcus Hirsch. In fact, we've got a very Chicago-centric conversation. Zoe Cadman has breezed by with the one and only. You grab that mic. I'm not going to miss an opportunity to say hello to you.
Hi.
Zoe.
How are you? I'm here with Doodle, and the sun is shining and is glorious here at Santa Anita.
Right? Isn't that good to
see? Hammer to my right. Mr. Bick to my left.
And Mac Doodle always with you.
And Mac Doodle's here, so life is good.
Except that time he got lost when he was MIA. That was a crazy incident.
Right.
How long was he missing?
3 days.
That was long enough.
It was a long 3 days, but
it was the most panic-stricken Santa Anita's ever been.
Mac is back was the tagline after that. Mac is back.
Which is kind of cool because Santa Anita is a racetrack that does allow our forfeited friends to run around. And you know, some don't, but as you look around
There were dogs everywhere in the chandelier room yesterday for Craig Frable's birthday party.
Yeah, so no, it's great.
It's definitely dog-friendly here.
It's fantastic, and we love it.
That is so great. I mentioned Chicago-centric, and of course, Zoe, You spent the majority, right, of your career in Chicago.
I did, yeah. In fact, I just met a guy this morning, George. He was like, hey, didn't you used to work in Arlington? He's like, I remember you from Arlington Park. Did Marcus hang up as soon as I picked up the mic?
No, we're getting...
No, I think he hung up. He heard Zoe and he hung up.
Marcus did not hang up.
Yeah, I think he did.
When he heard Zoe Cadman's
name. Absolutely, he did hang up.
Marcus,
sorry, Marcus, I'll be gone.
I heard Zoe Cadman say anything.
I'll be gone in a minute. Did you hang up as soon as you heard my voice?
No, but I'm about to.
I knew that wouldn't take long.
That was good. I said that it was a Chicago-centric conversation with Marcus Hirsch joining us. We'll do some game plan, but I first will mention, because I'm not going to get a chance to reach Jim Miller today, Hawthorne kicks off, and Marcus, very aggressive marketing posture as they slash the whips. Win, play, show, take out to 12%.
Well, I mean, might as well try something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, what I remember most about Zoe's riding career in Chicago was the jockey's foot race at Arlington Park. Zoe, do you remember that?
I'm not very quick on my feet.
That's what I found out. I was shocked.
Yes, I'm bred to go long, Marcus. You may think I'm fast because I have a fast mouth, but my legs are slow and short. I ran cross-country at school. So, yes, I finished last. I might have fallen over. I did try.
Yes, I know. That's the worst part of it. And I think I rated you pretty highly in that column.
Yeah, you have me the favorite. I told you you're crazy. I'm like, you can't even handicap the jockeys. What's wrong?
You sort of built like a corgi when it comes to...
Yeah, I mean, he thought I was built like a quarter horse, but he was wrong.
Who won it, though? Who was the...
God, probably Eddie Perez with the shortest legs in the room. I can't remember.
Quick turnover.
It might have been Eddie Perez. He's pretty quick.
There's no way it was Eddie Perez.
I don't know. He's pretty quick.
Nice shot.
Really? Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I have a hard time believing.
I wanted to get the Hawthorne side of things in and wish them a safe, successful meet. We'll touch base.
No. I didn't mean to diminish the low takeout. Everyone's, you know, a lot of people are clamoring for it. Few people will try it. And when they do, they abandon it before ever really has a chance to take hold. So exactly. I wish them well. I think it's great.
Well, and you know, it's one thing to lower to have aggressive multi-race wagers. The multi-race wagers don't need low takeout as much as the whips, and the churn for Win Play Show 12%. That's a nice that really is well worth championing. So good luck to them, and they're trying hard. And let's face it, they and FanDuel Racing in Collinsville is Illinois racing, and that's just what it is. And instead of every conversation starting out with lamenting Arlington, let's deal with the reality. Marcus, while we've got Zoe here, I'd love for you to talk about the Big Cap, because I know it, and the San Felipe, because I know it's two of your three races for Game Plan.
Yeah, well, I mean, Zoe's probably been watching these horses train, or not train, as the case may be.
I'll follow you, Marcus. You're the expert handicapper. I'll follow your lead.
No one has ever said that without using a mocking tone, Zoe.
There was no sarcasm there whatsoever. I have a straight face, Marcus.
Not even an eye roll.
Okay.
Maybe a little.
I do my best.
We know.
But this is quite a strong renewal of the Santa Anita handicap, I would say.
Positivity coming from Marcus. I like that.
Yeah, I was surprised it came up this strong. I know Zoe's got connections to the Michael Stidham barn. Zoe, what do you think of Proxy's chances?
Well,
I think he's got a good chance.
Yeah, and his numbers stack up very well. I actually liked him in the Pacific World Cup, and in hindsight, that probably wasn't the ideal track for him. He went back
Not
to his old ways of just lollygagging. I mean, ultimately, the end plan was to go to Dubai, and after that, it was a little up in the air. I'm not sure if he runs good in this race, whether they may, but I doubt it.
It's too quick.
But if he can run back to the Clark, and I mean, this track's going to be pretty glib. We've had 10 inches of rain in the last week. I think he's going to really like this track. The outside draw is no problem whatsoever going a mile and a quarter here at Santa Anita. I think it's going to help him, and I love the fact he gets Johnny V back aboard him, who knows him, and he's got a pump. He's got to ride that bike the whole mile and a quarter.
Yeah, definitely. I wish that he were a horse that could run through kickback and, you know, overcome difficult circumstances, but he didn't do that at all at Gulfstream, and I'm not going to hold that against him in this race. He finished easily fastest. Once he got out in the clear, the race was long since over, but he rolled home. That just shows that the horse is in good form. I guess the only thing that gives me pause is his big win in the Clark. He got such a great trip, and the horse he beat, West Willpower, is fine, but I think there are a lot of better horses than that in this race. So I just worry that even if he steps up, likes a mile and a quarter, runs his best race, he might come up just short. But I think he's going to run well.
Yeah, I think he'll be clear of kickback, drawn in the 11 hole, and hopefully he's tactical. He might be able to sit three wide. I mean, he's bred to go a mile and a half. He might wind up running that far.
Mile and a half, interesting. Panty Raid was a grade one winner on turf and dirt. I think both over 9 furlongs is dam. So
yeah, he'll run all day.
Yeah, he's got a lot of stamina. Okay, so what do you think of Hopper?
I put Hopper as a bet against going a mile and a quarter, to be perfectly honest. There's going to be...
You put him as what?
A bet against.
Oh, wow. Okay, I love him going a mile and a quarter.
All right. Okay, good.
Have you seen his gallops?
Oh, he's beautiful.
Baffert doesn't let them gallop out much. This horse gallops out on his own. I mean, he looks like he wants to run all day. Why? Because he didn't think he stayed last time?
I think he got ground down late, and I think there's going to be pace of plenty up front. I'm just worried that, and we've got a lot of fresh horses here at Santa Anita right now. There is going to be a wicked pace up front, and he is going to be part of it. And now I will take a Baffert horse over any other horse if they're dueling for a mile and a quarter, but I'm not going to take Hopper.
Yeah, I mean, I think he might be... he might be way better than it's clear from his form. We'll see. I thought he outworked Defunded. I like him way more than Defunded, I'll say that.
Interesting. And the pace, you know, Zoe, since you referred to it, and we'll bring up with the San Felipe momentarily, what is your view of what to expect tomorrow in terms of the horses who barely did more than jog and maybe get 2 days of galloping in over the last 8 days?
They're going to be fresh. And, I mean, it's not a bad thing, but if you've got a horse that's keen on the lead, they're probably going to be a little bit keener.
A little extra clean.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, especially with these late races, perhaps some trainers that don't train on the morning of the race might take some of their colts or fillies out and train them in the morning just to get the edge off. I mean, a lot of the old school trainers will do that. You know, you're running at 5 o'clock in the evening, you've got a fresh horse, take them out, jog them a couple of times.
Take an edge off.
Take the edge off them. So that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, people like Bob don't do that anymore. But I think
there aren't many of those people left.
No. There's not many, but there's a few. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, no. I mean, it makes sense to me. I'm not that worried about everyone except those Shippin has missed the same amount of training.
Exactly.
People overtrain their horses.
And those
Shippins
had
anyway.
A tough trip to get here. I spoke to Joe Sharp this morning. He said his horse, who just galloped right now, did you see him go?
I missed him.
You missed him. He looked really good. Scarlet Fusion.
I've been talking about him all week.
He left on Tuesday morning. He left New Orleans at 5:30 in the morning and got to Santa Anita at 9:30 at night.
So a schlep.
So it's just typical American travel is what you're saying.
Exactly. It used to be easy, but they've got a van to Memphis, and then they have to fly, and then, you know, it's just not easy anymore. So I actually, Joe's horse is good. I like Joe's. He got over the track very nicely this morning. That's the 9 Scarlet Fusion. I like There Goes Harvard going a mile and a quarter.
I almost picked him. And I think he's way better than his last two, obviously. I would have liked to have seen him run a little better last time because he did run well on turf before he won the mile and a quarter of grade one. But
didn't run that badly, you know?
No, it wasn't that bad. It was good enough to not make me think that he's not in form.
You know, and those are some pretty good horses in front of him to get beat 4.5 lengths off a long layoff, and Whitey doesn't crank him.
And he's not a turf horse anyway.
He comes back with a bullet work. Who else is in it?
Did you see the work I saw? I didn't really like. There was only one work video. Have you been watching him?
He's sharp in the morning. He's pretty sharp. He's not the best workhorse in the morning, and the fact he was able to work in 47 and 1 was good enough for me. I mean, Warrant's in here. He's going to show some pace, but that's New Orleans kind of pace.
Warrant? He's not going to show pace, is he? He's going to get outrun, I think.
Yeah. He'll be fairly close, though. He'll be in the first wave.
Probably second flight, I'd say. I don't know.
Listen, he was half a length off a 45 and 4 pace last year going a mile and a quarter.
Yeah, that track can get that way, though, right? I mean, it's the way a lot of the races are run.
So, you know, he can show pace when he needs to.
Well, it's a fun group and a great way to end this deep card. Let's go mid-card, though, and talk three-year-olds where we've got a fascinating array. There's the Baffert transfers. There's Yakteen's horse that he's had since it came to the racetrack, Practical Move. We've got the horse coming down for Ed Mosier from San Francisco. Yeah, and then there is what might be one or two au courant horses when it comes to both John Sheriffs with Skinner, and Richard Mandela with Go Rocket Ride. Feel like the two interesting players to talk about. Marcus?
I like both of those horses. I like this race. It's a really good group, and it should be... It should help clarify things to some extent. But I got fascinated with Go Rocket Ride just starting when I watched this maiden win for Breakout Buyers, because, I mean, it just struck me as he was pretty unusual because he showed a lot of inside speed, but he also, I mean, the way he responded in the stretch and kicked on and galloped out, that's not like the typical just go as fast as you can and hang on first time starter at all. He looked much more substantive than that. He carries his head really high, but he just seems to do that all the time. I mean, it's striking, but it seems to be not an issue for him. But other than that, I mean, I love the way he's into things, his training too. I mean, his last work, his gallop out, he galloped out like 2.5 miles or something. And then I read a comment from Mandela that he's trained to run for the Kentucky Derby already. I just think that, like, with a horse like this, maybe it's too much too soon and maybe he just falls apart. But he could be an absolute star, and the price he's going to be, if he is what I think he might be, it's going to look like great value on him.
What do you think he's going to be, Marcus?
I don't know, because I don't know how hyped his works are. And so you would know probably better than I don't think National Treasure is going to take that much money. I don't think Hijazi is going to take that much money. I think that both this horse and Skinner could be shorter than their 5-1 morning line odds potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with you. National Treasure for sure is going to be the favorite. I think he's going to take all the money. Go Rocket Ride will definitely take some money. I loved him in his debut. I actually had a little wager on him. I love the story.
He was awesome. The horse he beat is pretty good.
Oh, Sonoran, formerly Luke the Legend. He was an OBS June graduate. Really cool little horse that actually Jill Baffert owns, and she renamed him.
And won very well next time.
Yeah, he won by 7 the next time.
You're never supposed to rename horses.
Well, it hasn't hurt him, has it?
I guess not.
But Go Rocket Ride, he's a very, very good horse. I was there for the work. He worked with a really nice filly called Venegaza, who's out of Avenge, who hasn't run yet. And Dick is really, really high on her, so you can mark her down and thank me later. But Go Rocket Ride had a good work. He sat off her. He ate a little bit of dirt. He didn't love that. I mean, he kind of stuck around for it. But I wouldn't want to see him buried in this race if he gets off to a bad start.
He's drawn outside.
Exactly.
That's what I liked about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he can take a little bit should something happen.
And didn't they have a third horse like come up to his flank at that 3/16 just to give him a sense of pressure from behind?
Well, not one of Dick's horses. But
that wasn't Mandela's. I couldn't tell what the saddle style was. That's how it worked out, though.
But he went very well. And the thing that you have to look at, too, was that was the day before all the rains that they opted to close the track early, and there was no break. So Mandela went down there expecting a fresh harrowed track, and there wasn't. So he was working over a track that was cut up, deep, tiring. So all that taken into consideration, that was a very good work.
Wow.
You know who Skinner's work was? Looked like it was over even a worse track. His last drill.
Exactly. And the one thing I'll say about... The one thing I'll say about Skinner is I spoke to John Sheriffs about him, and he was a little concerned, not with that they perhaps missed a work, which he did just have a little work on the 23rd, was the fact that he's missed all his gallops. He said he gets most of his fitness out of his gallops because he's not the most terrific workhorse. So, I mean, that was one thing that he did tell me that he was concerned about, the fact they've only been allowed to jog and that this horse gets a lot of his fitness from his gallops. But he's a good horse.
He's talented. I liked his race. I just don't think he has the sheer brilliance of Go Rocket Ride for me.
Correct. I like National Treasure.
I think he's pretty good still. He might be really good. We'll have to see.
The connections. I spoke to Jack Wolf the other day. That's his horse. That's the go-to, and he'll run all day. But I really like Tim's horse, Practical Move, in here.
Wow, okay.
So a little practical move, National Treasure, go Rocket and Skinner. That's the four
pack.
Why don't
I just like straddle the fence all day? Yeah.
No, that's a good four. Nothing wrong with that. I've got a 10-2-3 myself, so we're in the same ballpark, and you both are making excellent cases for Go Rocket Ride.
What about the ownership group, though? It's a really cool story. You may see listed as Pin Oak Stud. Now, I believe they're coming to the races, Jim and Dana Bernard. They bought Pin Oak Stud, which is formerly Josephine Abercrombie.
Mrs. Abercrombie.
And as part of the deal, they must have thrown in the colors, because it's not often you see historic colors come back into action. So this horse runs in those famed blue and silver striped silks that we saw Hasten to Add run in, and many of her other really good horses, Broken Vow, run in those silks. So it's really cool. This is the first horse he bought for his wife as a birthday present. Didn't know how expensive it was going to be, because then he had to buy the farm.
He literally bought the farm. him and Victor Kayam.
It's a good story. Yeah. So I'm really rooting for them.
I love it.
You need new people in the game, right?
Mrs. Abercrombie was an amazing woman.
Amazing lady.
Yes, she was.
Okay, Zoe, while you're on the horn, what about the Kilroy Mile? It's a race that I've always liked, and I like this group too. I'm looking forward to it. Is the favorite going to win?
Hold on, I'm looking. What race number?
It's Hong Kong Harry.
It's the 11.
Oh, it's Hong Kong. Well, Pratt just told me yes, because I just saw Air Force Red coming off the track, and Leo was on him, and he's been jogging for a week, and he is as high as a kite, Air Force Red, and I like that for him. So Pratt was on a horse coming on. He was on window shopping for Dick Mandela, waiting to come on the track, and I see Air Force Red. I'm like, hey, there's the winner, and he's like, no. He goes, Hong Kong Harry. I'm like, he's coming out of a... He needs to run longer. No. So there you have it.
You said he needs to run longer?
I did.
Oh, I think he's a miler, but yeah. I think he's a little overrated. I think he's the most likely winner, but I love Balmakoff. That horse is so plucky and brave. The field's not big enough for him, really. He likes to be inside and between like eight horses at a time to really get into it.
I mean, the turf's not going to be firm. So that's one other thing you need to take into consideration in here. I like Air Force Red. I think he's going to hang on.
Well, Brad, we introduced the conversation talking about Air Force Red and Master of Foxhounds basically, you know, sparring on the front end. Master of Foxhounds gets first run, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I don't think he can keep up with Air Force Red, can he?
Zoe?
Not from what I saw coming off the track this morning. He was breathing
fire. I think of him as more like mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter speed. The other horse is sprint speed.
So either Air Force Red hangs on or Hong Kong Harry arrives on the scene late.
That's probably going to be the French exacta for me.
Mais oui.
No. You heard it right from Flavian.
No. Marcus, your third play, I think, what'd you look at?
Well, okay, I mean, all week I was liking, I was waiting for Iron Clover in the Gotham. He didn't beat very much. Well, he beat nothing last time, to be frank. But he did, he was very too keen in his debut, I thought, but he settled better. And then I saw him work on the 18th. He worked two pairs, the first set, Verifying and Giant Mischief. And then this horse worked with another horse. I thought this horse worked the best of all four, and I really liked the way he went past the wire and around the turn. I think despite looking at Lucky, he's got a ton of speed, but I think he'll get a mile. But then the more I looked at him, like, there aren't enough other horses here. Like, he's the horse you're supposed to be against here, not four, even if I just couldn't go there. And the Fountain of Youth is must-see racing, but even though I think Blazing Sevens is closer to Forte than maybe a lot of people do, I don't want to back him as the strong second choice. But this horse, White Frost and the Honey Fox, well, what caught my eye there was that I don't think either Chad Brown horse has to win the Honey Fox. Speak of the Devil is absolutely a softer ground specialist. I mean, that turf course at Churchill was by no means firm. She loved that. Most horses didn't at all. I she didn't obviously go on to do anything else from there, but I think she's being pointed to that race again. And Faith in Humanity is fine, but to me, nothing special. But this horse, White Frost, I was a fan of hers before her long layoff. She's done nothing wrong. Her trip in the Winter Memories, Plum Ali got an easy lead. This horse had a much worse trip, and even though she pulled too hard in her long layoff comeback race, she still finished very fast. She's got great tactical pace, and I think she's just going to be appealing value with those other two horses in here.
Oh, you're bouncing all over the place. I can't keep up.
I looked at the Archie Bred races, Zoe. Did you see those?
Let's talk about those. Yeah, we need to buy an Archie Bred and just run it for four months out of the year and retire.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's kind of what they do a lot of the time.
What's Madge? What's wrong with Madge and Rocket Can in the Fountain of Youth?
Madge, he's fine. I don't know. I thought he was fine. I wasn't blown away by his debut.
Okay.
Rocket Can, I mean, he's part of a pretty key race. Hit Show and Confidence Game, right?
Yeah.
Running that race.
Yep.
And this horse could improve a lot. I mean, the last race was so slow, just remarkably slow. I don't think he's as good as those other two horses. Of course, I mean, it's 2 to 3. We don't know. Right. Forte, I mean, have you watched his works?
Yeah, I mean, they're good. He looks like he's grown a little bit.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Some people are raving about them, and I've been like, well, he looks like he didn't grow that much. He's working fine. He's galloping out good. He's probably fit. Blah,
I mean,
blah,
this
blah.
Is the time to tackle him if he's going to be vulnerable is right now, so... I mean, there's no question he's the best horse in the race, but I can understand why people are trying to beat him.
Me too. I did think Blazing Sevens was... I'm not that worried about him at two turns. I think he'll be fine. I think if you dig deeper into the whole trajectory of his two-year-old year, and I know the trainer said he had no excuse in the Breeders' Cup. I have to disagree. I gave him a big excuse. I thought his trip was really demanding and that he finished quite well.
Yeah, I'm
finished
with
as
you.
Well as Forte and galloped out in front of him quickly, and that's not everything, but it showed to me that he stays two turns.
My God, I should just drop the mic and walk off because myself and Marcus agree on something.
I think we agree on a lot, yeah. Actually.
We do. No, you guys have agreed on quite a bit. Well, Marcus, I appreciate it, and the game plan action. And as we wrap up, because I got to get a break in and then run the second half, and your impression from last week of the Risen Star.
I mean, of the Rebel.
Yeah.
I mean, I was impressed at the bump. My bankroll took.
Because you gave it out for everybody.
Well done, Marcus.
I did like that horse.
$39.
I got lucky, though. I mean, for bad trips, I think it was a very good race. I think it's maybe the top to bottom, the best race in that division so far this year. I thought, Red Rat 1 is obviously paced a bit, but he's solid. The third place horse, Reincarnate, he showed me a ton. I think he's good and verifying. I don't put him in the same class, really, as the top three, but he also had a difficult trip and is better than his bare finish. So I take away that it was a very legitimate race in the division.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. The top three finishers all come off. Well, Marcus, I appreciate this. Glad to get you on with Zoe Cadman,
too. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I can't say that I had any idea what I was getting into, but once there, what can you do but just keep talking?
Just hang or hang up.
He threatened. He threatened that. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch, of course, and Game Plan. Marcus, I hope to talk to you next week, maybe, I'll be in Vegas for NHC. So good luck this
All
weekend.
Right. We'll do the Dubai Super Saturday wrap-up.
There you go. Dubai Super Saturday tomorrow as well. The morning action leading up to the Carnival Fest. Marcus, I appreciate it. And Zoe, when was the last time you say... send off,
bye,
Marcus.
Bye, darling. Always a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Cheers.
No. No. That was so great. That was fun.
Cool. Thank you.
Well, hold on. I got to take a picture for the listing. You're not just going to run off. You want to get Doodle in this?
Absolutely.
Let's get Doodle in. And, Case, let's go to the break. We're only going to get one. And there we go, with Hammer and with Doodle and with Zoe. There we go. Pull together, two of you. All right. This is our ritual. Look at Doodle. Mac, Doodle. Doodle.
You won.
No, huh? Doodle? Not like a horse, huh? Ears up. Nice. There we go. Thank you. Got to get right back to action here. That was fabulous with Zoe pitching in. I knew putting her together with Marcus was a win-win. And hopefully we got win-wins the rest of the morning, the second half of the show, Hammer.
Yeah, well, Zoe's on the TV analyst department here at Santa Anita. You can see why. She's full of life, got information, talks to all the jocks, the trainers, everybody. Got those little tidbits that nobody knows until she says it.
Exactly. James Scully next, Dave Grenick, Nick Tamaro, Gary Young, Mike Welch. Your second half.
Murderers Row.
Twin Spires. Weekend preview at the races from the Great Race Place. Stay with us. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups.